Wholesaling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up, sir.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Hi-ya! That's right. We are back in effect talking with TD. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. We got Elijah Campbell's hitting the switches, making it work. Chris Sanders coming on. We'll definitely bring him in. But this show right here, folks, it is packed. We had to dial up, use the phone a friend feature, and we got Teddy Bruschi on. He's going to talk a bit about the Titans and Julio Jones and the defense and Mike Vrabel. He actually has a recipe. His wife has a recipe that Mike Vrabel and his wife, Jen, fell in love with. So I got a joke with him about that. But then we're going to get into a little what's going on in Atlanta with my OG, man, D. Orlando Ledbetter from the AJC, Atlanta Journal-Constitutional. And we got Nate Washington. I told you this show was packed. We have a couple former Titans receivers. Nate and TD, not show, but segment's going to be coming. But before we get into all that, we're going to open it up the way we always do. Elijah, cue it up. Yeah. Yeah. You got to lean back. That's right, Elijah. Lean back and play the guitar to that one. Run TMC. There is literally one thing to talk about.
One
thing. And you know what it is. I might even have to put a little Sanders and Saudi into it, but we'll see. Chris, what's going on, man?
Man, I am good, man. Just tripping off this Julio stuff, man. You know, listen, I'm not a guy who wears jerseys or different people's jerseys. I mean, I'm a Michael Jordan fan. I'm a, you know, LeBron fan. I never went and got their jerseys. But with all the hype going on right now, I just might go get me a Julio Jones jersey and rock it out, baby.
You should get your own jersey. Oh, yeah, Elijah, I forgot.
That was crazy.
I forgot to intro him, too.
There you go.
And
God.
Now, starting at center for the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay.
Rollins.
I got one for you. Look like Seal the Singer.
Yo, man. you stopped me mid-laugh with that one. That's not cool, man. That's not cool. Next topic. Julio Jones.
Yes, sir.
Well, I mean, the last couple of weeks, we kind of approached the possibility. I know you definitely presented some good points. What are your thoughts? What's your initial thoughts?
Hey, you got a three-headed monster, really. I mean, just you got not just three great players, but you have three impact players. That's totally different. I mean, look around the league. Look at a team that has three impact players like the Tennessee Titans. I mean, you have Henry, you have A.J. Brown, and you have Julio Jones. And if you look at A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, these are some great wide receivers. And I'm going to tell you why. What they do after they catch the ball, That's what makes them so special. I know Julio Jones is going to jump over about five or six people. But, man, when them jokers get the ball in their hand, there's something special. And then don't forget about that big boy. What's his name in the backfield? Henry?
The John Deere tractor?
Yeah, he's going to run through your face. And when he's going to run through your face, and then, now check this out, he's going to run through your face. And then if Julio Jones runs the ball, he's going to run through your face. And then you got A.J. Brown that's big, that's going to catch the ball, and he's going to run through your face. Basically, you just going to get your face ran through.
He's going to run through somebody's lips, right?
Lips.
But no, all jokes aside, I like how you bring that up, because now you got a 225 and 235 pound guy on opposite sides to catch the ball in that play action, you know, that slant and the daggers and those type of things, man. That's going to be a really good opportunity for the free yards, you know, and that's something to watch. So I just love the fact that they have so much positive things going on with this team. And, you know, A.J. Brown, we might have to get him to, you know, I think we're going to get him to lobby for a baseball team. You know, I want to see MLB here in Nashville, and he lobbied for Julio and got him. Maybe he'll get us a baseball team.
But you know, it's so funny. Even though, I mean, and I give this illustration. I gave it to the illustration before. Is this is kind of like a marriage right now? I mean, everything's sweet and everything's great, and you know, the honeymoon's great, and everybody's on cloud nine. But just about 6 or 7 months later, now in the marriage, you're gonna wake up, and you know, they're gonna have morning breath. You're like, is this the same person? But then the thing about it is you got to make it work after you get outside the honeymoon. And that's exactly with the Tennessee Titans. Right now we have a honeymoon. Everybody's happy. Everybody's excited. But at the end of the day, they got to get on the field and work. And I think Todd Downing, he has a big task at hand. He's got to figure out the formations to put Julio Jones in. I know we've been talking about they don't have a slot receiver. This just made the Tennessee Titans better because Julio played in the slot. He played outside on the perimeter. So just imagine him being in the slot and him and A.J. Brown being on the same side. Man, that's a dangerous combo.
Yeah, that's absolutely a dangerous combo. And I mean, I'm looking forward to just seeing how this thing works. And, you know, it's all about, like, the balance. The balance that this presents is going to be really interesting for me just mm-hmm. to see how that works. Because Derrick Henry, as you mentioned, he requires so much attention. He requires so much. And then now, on top of that, you're not going to be able to double team A.J. Brown. And I think that's something just in talking to A.J., like he's really happy about that. And I would be too, you know. So that's a positive part of it as well. And I think it's just really good for them to have this situation set up the way that it is.
Yeah, but even take it a different further, TD. Check this out. Say if we go 20 personnel, two backs, zero tight ends, three wide receivers, and then you have Evans in the backfield and you have Henry in the backfield. What do you do? I mean, what do you do as a defensive coordinator? Who do you stop? Who do you key? Because if you put eight or nine guys in the box and those guys go one-on-one on the outside, that's a dangerous combination. And then you could flank Evans out to one of the single receiver side. Now you're at a 2x2. Then all of a sudden, who are you going to cover?
Yeah, and that's the whole thing.
That's scary, man. And the thing about it is, we just got to keep everybody healthy. I mean, we can't have A.J. Brown going down, or we can't have Julio, you know, Jones go down, or Henry go down. But if we can keep this team healthy, I'm telling you, man, this can be an exciting football team.
Yeah, and that's the main thing, the health, right? You got to make sure that Julio Jones is able to stay in good standing, right, with good old Father Time, because you know how it could weigh on you. So that's something else to be watching, you know what I mean? And I just think when you look at it, like, how do you think this impacts everyone else on the team, though?
Oh, it makes everybody better. And it doesn't just make A.J. Brown better. It makes Henry better. Because it takes the load off of him. So now I know everybody's talking about the Tennessee Titans are run first, pass second. I think you're going to be able to throw on first and second down as opposed to Henry running the ball. Because just like I said, Henry's getting up there, and he's you know, the last couple of years, he's carried the load. He has over 300-something carries a year. I mean, that's a lot for a back to carry. So now you lighten his load, and you start passing more, and those other guys start making plays. It makes A.J. Brown better. It makes Ferkser better. It makes Henry better. It makes the other running backs better. It even makes the line better because you can do so many things, TD. And it's not just, you know, everybody's looking at it, okay, well, it's just going to make A.J. Brown better. No, it's making the offense better because you can do so many things. And I think if they can do so many things, our defense is going to have a hard time stopping this Tennessee Titans offense.
And that's really the major part of it, you know, making it hard. But look, we talked about everything being good, right, and all of that, but you have to give a yang for the yin, you know what I mean? So you look at the whole fit and mm-hmm. just the amount of targets. I asked John Robinson specifically, you know, Julio Jones, you know, over his career, pretty much 9 targets per game. It's not going to happen here consistently. So is that a conversation that you had with him? And he said that goal number one for Julio Jones is winning. So it sounds good, right? Not having a goal for 9 to 10 targets, but, you know, it goes back. I mean, do we got to get on our new edition? You know, tell me, baby, can you stand the rain? You know what I mean? That's really, how is it going to be when it gets choppy and that target isn't where it needs to be?
Exactly. That's what we talked about. When it's 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8, or 3rd and 9, and the game's on the line, and they throw it to A.J. Brown, how is he going to respond? It's kind of like this. It's kind of like this, T.D. I love Waffle House. I can eat Waffle House every single day. But just imagine if they close down Waffle House and I don't get no more Waffle House. I'm going to be mad because I'm like, I love my Waffle House. Mm-hmm. That's the same thing with Julio Jones. I'm not saying he's like this, but if somebody starts to take something away that you love, you're going to get angry. He loves to catch the football. He loves to make those big plays. But here's the deal. If he's coming in and his whole focus is wanting to win, wanting to be a team player, then it can work. But when it's 3rd and 8 and 3rd and 9 and Tannehill throws it to A.J. Brown, is he going to go to the sideline and throw his helmet and yell at Tannehill and do those things? I'm not saying he's going to do that, but if that starts doing that, does it become a distraction or what do you do? So those are the questions that we're going to see, because right now, just like I talked about the marriage, it's a honeymoon. It's hunky-dory right now. But what's going to happen if A.J. Brown catches 9 passes and he catches 2? How's he going to respond?
Well, what is that like? Because, I mean, you've been in a situation.
Been through it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I've been through it when I was in 1999, the year we went to the Super Bowl. We had Nancy Thigman, we had Kevin Dyson, we had Derek Mason, we had Isaac Byrd. We had a lot of guys that were good at wide receiver. So when they drafted Kevin Dyson in 1998 and brought Yancey Thigpen in 1998, all at the same time, I'm like, you know, what about me? But what I did is I said, you know what, I'm going to be a team player, but I'm going to play so well that they have to play me. Not that they play me to be better than my teammate, but they're going to have to play me because I'm going to make plays. I mean, just imagine, we're not talking about the other receivers. We're not talking about Batson. We're not talking about Fitzpatrick, and we're not talking about Reynolds. Just imagine how they're feeling right now. Okay, mm-hmm. You brought me in to come in and help this team, but then everybody's screaming for Julio Jones. I'm over here. I can make plays. You drafted me for a reason. So everybody has to know their role, and if they know their role, then you can put the piece together and get a good picture and go get away the championship.
Well, I think that's what it's ultimately about, is understanding your role and understanding what part of the puzzle you are in the big scheme of things, which is obviously – making it to the Super Bowl and winning it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Don't want to just get there. You want to win it. So,
yeah.
It's.
I mean, they got the pieces, man.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that. What is it about this team now that makes you think that? I mean, well, first, let me ask you, have they elevated above Buffalo? Have they elevated? That's Jarrett. Jarrett Stillman loves the Bills, man. Loves the Bills. Have they elevated above Buffalo? Have they elevated above the Browns? Are they above the Ravens, who took them out last year? Are they above, let's see, there's got to be another, the Colts?
I think that they're even. Can I say even? The reason why I say even is I know they're explosive on the offense, but they got some pretty good players on defense. It all depends on what Dupree does. If Dupree comes back healthy, just made the defense 100% better. You have Autry that came from the Colts. He chews up double teams. And then you got Farley, the first-round pick that they drafted. So if you add all these pieces together, and then you got, you know, Elijah Molden, you got him, you got all these pieces that you're putting together. If all those guys are healthy and all those question marks are answered, and you got a defense that can just get a one or two stops a game, and you have this explosive offense, that's how you win championships. And that's why I say the Tennessee Titans are even.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and we could just kind of go against each one. Going against the Bills, I think the advantage in that game is the rushing attack. Yeah, that's really, but the Bills at this point have the better defense. You know, going against the Browns, that I think is about as even as possible.
Yeah.
That one right there, I could legitimately say, you know, you can't sway me one way or the other. But then looking at, because the Browns got some good players coming back too. You know what I mean?
They got some dogs, man.
And they signed Johnson, I believe it is, from the Rams, you know, the safety. Yeah. So that's going to be good. So you look at the Ravens, there's always give and take there, man. That's an emotional game, and that's one that it could go either way. But I would probably go advantage Titans in that one. And then the Colts, I believe it's advantage Titans in that one. But that's another one. There's give and take. There's no telling what direction that game would go, because these are two familiar teams. But I think we need to look at the Chiefs. And here's the thing. I still firmly believe the Chiefs are the top team. Mm-hmm. But I think the Titans match up with them the best. And this are Titans and Browns. Those two teams. Titans, Browns, and Colts, probably, I would say. I would say those three teams. And you know why? It's because those teams. Well, I'm going to drop the Colts out of it. The Browns and Titans match up best. I'm going to stand by this point, okay? It's the Browns and Titans. And I look at it this way. You look at what they bring to the table as far as a rushing attack, that physical brand of football. And the Titans and they run the ball better than these other teams, right? Obviously, than the Chiefs. So you go in there, and we saw it in 2019. You go in there, you punch them in the face, right? And that just, like, takes the air out of the stadium. But the Titans and Browns can also win shootouts. And I think that's the difference between that team and the Colts. Although the Colts, I would say, have the best defense out of all those teams we went over.
I agree.
This team, though, with Julio Jones being added, now you got the firepower that you could go these teams. So when it's time to throw the football, Ryan Tannehill, guess what? You're going to have to step up and make things happen. And I think it's a lot easier for him to do it with Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Derrick Henry and Anthony Ferguson and the whole crew.
I think with the Kansas City Chiefs, I think you're not going to – I know they're going to win some games this year, but I think watching that Super Bowl, I think there's a game plan out to stop the Kansas City Chiefs. And it all starts with up front to put pressure on Mahomes. And I think that when teams saw what Tampa Bay did to him, when he didn't have a touchdown the first half, or was it the whole game?
I think it was just the first half.
I think it's the first half. He didn't have a touchdown, and he was getting harassed. There's going to be a blueprint out for the Kansas City Chiefs. That's why I don't have them up top yet, because teams are going to figure them out really, really quick. I like the Bills, man. I think the Bills are dirty, and I like Baltimore. They're dirty. I like Indianapolis Colts. The reason why I love the Indianapolis Colts is because that team has something to prove. Wentz, you know, I know everybody said, oh, he gets hurt all the time. He has an edge, man. He's going to come back and show that he's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. So that's why I say they're a dangerous team.
You know, the thing is that edge has a gift and a curse, though. You know what I mean? Because I've seen it, man. The guy will play hero football, and I've talked about it. You know, it's second and three, right? And you get the 2 yards, right? You break the pocket, you get 2 yards. He's going to dive for that third one, and chances are that's going to involve some physical contact. Mm-hmm. My thing is this. Just go ahead and live to see another down. Give the ball to Jonathan Taylor. Let him – he's 225. He's built for that. Let him – that's what he's paid. He's paid to take that pounder. Let him do that. You got to live to see another play, and that's the thing with him, and also the supreme confidence that he has. The guy thinks that he could fit the ball through any window, and that is why he threw so many interceptions. And then you got to factor in that the whole thing with the sack thing. His mental side of it is not there. And everybody just elementary level points to the offensive line for the sack totals, and it's not always them. Sometimes the quarterback's holding the football too long, and that's what he did a lot of. So there are some things with Wentz that still have to be addressed, but – I still put the Colts up there, and this is going to be just fun to just see how this all plays out.
The AFC South is nasty right now.
Disgusting.
Just straight up stanky. I mean, seriously. Hey, and I know everybody's talking about this is Jackson's rebuilding year. Okay, all right. Don't be surprised if they win some ball games. I understand they got a rookie quarterback, but they got something to prove. But here's the thing: they're sitting in a prime position. Instead of them being hunted, they're hunting. So that makes a difference. And that's what the Tennessee Titans used to do. When they were hunting people, they were really good. But when they started to become hunted, then that's where they faltered. So I'm telling you, man, anything can happen in the AFC South.
Absolutely. That being said, you know what it's time to do, right, Elijah, for this segment? Throw the damn towel!
Dude, we got to come up with a segment with that, man. Throw the towel!
We might just do that, a time when a team should have quit but didn't.
Exactly.
Something like that. Chris, I appreciate you, man. We want extra, but it's what we do.
What we do. Appreciate you, boss.
All right. Hey, it's Teron Davenport. You ever had to sit and wait for 2 hours or longer to get new tires put on your car? Well, you don't have to do that anymore. Call my friends at Freedom Tire Guys. They're Nashville's premier mobile tire company that does it all. New tires, balance, rotation, everything. And they come to you. Your work, your job, your house, you name the spot.
Head online to FreedomTireGuys.com, fill out their tire calculator, pick your new tires, and schedule your service date. It's that easy. If you don't see something you like, give them a call and they'll find it for you. Check them out today at FreedomTireGuys.com.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD.
Yeah. I am not an Omega, but my guest is, and I could imagine somewhere my OG got his bow tie on, and I could just, I know he's throwing up the hooks. I know he is. We're going to bring in my OG, the originator of bow tie swag, D. Orlando Ledbetter. D. Led, what's going on, man?
Hey, thanks for that wonderful interest, Teron. I really appreciate it, and you were right about that. We had to throw him up. We hear Atomic Dog can't set out the hop like we used to, but we still got the enthusiasm for football.
No doubt about it, man. I appreciate you coming on, and it's always, always a pleasure. Elijah, this is one of my favorite people to catch up with, man, even if it's just 10, 15 minutes. Man, it just – this D-Led, my OG, he just makes me smile all the time, man. This is my guy, so I'm absolutely excited to be able to have him on. So I guess, right, we need to start with the connection now. There, I mean, there's three common connections here, but let's start with Julio Jones. And you saw him come in as a hot shot guy that the team traded up to get, and now you see him exit as a veteran, established player that was ready to move on. How would you summarize his time there in Atlanta?
Yeah, his 10 years were, quite productive. Went back year by year. Started out at Buford High School with a couple of his guys from Alabama, and Matt Ryan would pull up right behind him in his Audi, and start throwing it around at Buford's one of the football powerhouses of Georgia, so it's a great facility. But, just from that, on draft day, him giving me his mom's number, Miss Queen, to call. So, you know, we had a good relationship. But with him, the Falcons had just got to the number one seed, gotten to it with Green Bay, and couldn't keep up in the shootout. So they went and got them some more offense and eventually got to the NFC Championship game in 12, Julio balled out. He had 13 for 182, but they couldn't close out Kaepernick in there. Mm-hmm. So they lost that. They lost to the Giants the year they went to the Super Bowl and won. Then, later on, they'll lose to the Eagles when they won. And so he was in three, really. And then, of course, losing the Super Bowl in a game that he should have won. So they had three chances to win the Super Bowl over the 10 years. Those early teams with Julio, Roddy, and Tony Gonzalez, they used to say, pick your poison. And, they did until the line rebuild didn't work for them in 13 and 14. But, it's kind of the glory years of the Falcons. They hadn't won a lot, but since 2008, when Mike Smith came, they were one of the top teams in the league. Then Julio comes in 2011. He certainly helps to push them over the top, make them a contender in the NFC. And then, over the last 3 years, things kind of disintegrated. Another offensive line rebuild doesn't work. And Matt Ryan's running for his life. The defense rebuild doesn't work. And so you end up 7-9, 7-9, 4-12. And that has us here now where Julio wanted to get traded and go to a team with a chance to win.
And that's where we are. You mentioned that time where you had Roddy White, where you had Tony Gonzalez and Julio Jones there. And at that time, I believe Michael Turner there yet?
1 year with Michael Turner, and then with Steven Jackson.
Okay, so we're talking about established running backs with two other weapons along with Julio Jones. So I have to ask you, how did that whole process work? Because there weren't enough footballs to go around. How did Julio Jones handle that situation?
Well, I went back and did the numbers. They somehow got him. I mean, Tony would get 80. Roddy would get 80. They spread it around. They all, 1 year Roddy was 14. Julio had 12. Tony had 9. You really somebody's going to be open. Matt Ryan moved the ball around to him. So, and then Harry Douglas was the fourth wheel in that whole thing. Mm. So, it was quite the operation to see that under dirt cutter, put that together, get them in within the, striking distance of the Super Bowl. That drive ended on the 6-yard line. They blew a 17-point lead, which was foreshadow their problems to the Super Bowl 51. They can get leads, couldn't hold them. The defense just wasn't stout enough. And that was one of the hallmarks of the Dimitrov regime. Couldn't put a defense out there that could stop anybody when they needed to stop them.
And we're talking to D. Orlando Ledbetter, the OG of Bowtie Swag, of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I want to get back to the locker room. And not only do I respect you, the players respect you, have the utmost respect. So you get to see them, you interact with them. When you were in the locker room, and we were blessed to be able to do that back in the day, how was Julio Jones in the locker room? How did the players and the interaction and all of that go?
It went well. Roddy White was, kind of brought him into the league, and he saw that me and Roddy had a special relationship. He'd do his, gangbang, interviews with the masses, and then, I'd stay around and get what I needed. And so we had that same relationship. Julio wasn't as open as Roddy was. I know when Roddy would get fined, he would show me the letter from the league. I'd take a picture of it. And then I tweeted it one time, and then my boss was like, hey, take that down. We got to retract his home address off of that. So I was really cool with both of those guys. But in the last couple of years when it got kind of messy, Julio kind of was standoffish. He hasn't talked to anybody during this thing except for that Shannon Sharp radio thing. And so, we've been trying to get him through his people, CAA, and former coaches, former players, former PR staff, but he just, when it's controversy, he doesn't really want to, we don't really know what happened. I've got a lot of one source off the record stuff that I need him to confirm or deny. But that's all we're at. Everybody's trying to take the high road in this. And how do you lose your all time leading receiver on a coaching change?
Yeah, and that's the whole thing that just amazes me. And not only is he an all-time leading receiver, that is a guy, looking at some of the videos from the Falcons website, I mean, he was all over the younger guys as far as working with them. So I want to ask you this, the relationship with Calvin Ridley. So it was kind of like the torch was just passed as far as mentor, Roddy White to Julio Jones, and now Julio Jones to Ridley. What was that like, watching that firsthand, him help bring Ridley along?
Well, I think you can credit Terry Robiskie, Roger's coach, before that. He created a atmosphere of cooperation between the guys. It's like, hey, if we're all getting open, the ball's going to come our way. And Matt Ryan's always been good about that. So, if Roddy can get off and Julio can get off, the team's going to be better. Same thing, same concept with Calvin. As soon as they can get him adjusted to the NFL and short-circuited, then they did a pretty good job. He's almost a 1,000-yard receiver second year and then goes over 1,300 last year. They've definitely been a group that's passed that torch down, and now you're on the third guy that's running lead that has all the tools and all the necessary tricks of the trade to succeed in the National Football League.
Yeah, and one of the other receivers I really like in that, Rod, Olamide Zaccheaus. I love his game, man. He's an exciting player. So I'll still be watching the Falcons. And another reason why I watch the Falcons is because of their coaching staff. And I will say this, I love Coach Arthur Smith. I love Coach Pease. We have a history going back to Baltimore. And you remember my days there in Baltimore covering the Ravens. But your interactions with Coach Smith, what's your initial take on Coach Art?
Coach Smith is, he's getting used to being in the lead role right now. He didn't like this Julio situation. at all. It was kind of broken before he got here. Wasn't really much to fix. So, but we still got to talk about it. You just don't get to push the number one receiver in franchise history out the door without any commentary on it. But Coach Smith is he's getting the unit ready. They look really sharp here in the OTAs. You know, certainly the offense on the offensive side of the ball. And Coach Steve, and they're trying a lot of different stuff, trying everybody everywhere in multiple positions and so forth, just to try to come up with a formula that's going to give them a shot to win. You know, they got the quarterback, so if you got the quarterback, you got a lot. But, yeah, Coach Art is doing pretty good here in his first few months on the job here with the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And he's a great influence for the team. I expect to see – really good numbers for Matt Ryan, that's for sure. And then defensively, that's obviously an area where the team wanted to improve and get better. You bring in a guy who is literally a wizard in Dean Pease, and now, you know, you get to cover that, and that's going to be exciting. How have your conversations with Coach Pease gone?
Well, of course, we started off with his song making and his piano playing.
Yeah.
You know, let's get that out of the way because that was pretty interesting. Then we went through his time with New England. But I'll go back to Coach Pease. They're actually way, way back into his days at Miami of Ohio on Randy Walker's staff when I was in Cincinnati covering Ohio State and the Bearcats and all that. So I've been following Coach Pease. He's an Ohio guy. I'm an Ohio guy for a long time. So, but then we, for football, Falcon-wise, I had to go back with him over New England, Baltimore, and then his times at Tennessee. The retirement, you know, how do you, you know, switch it back to, you know, come out of retirement? And there was only going to be a couple things that would do that for him. So, he's got a blank slate over there. He's got two captains back, Foye Oluokun, the two captains, Grady Jarrett and Deion Jones, and then everything else is, you know, wide open. The left cornerback, A.J. Terrell, got his spot, but so you got four guys and seven openings. So, you know, everybody's got to compete, and whoever learns his defense the fastest is going to have a better chance of getting out on the field. And they're just hoping they can get something out of Dante Fowler over there at one of the outside linebacker spots. So, that's where they're at. He's teaching. He's out there vocal. He's into it. And, you know, there's no way. The only place to go is up. This is the 32nd ranked pass defense in the league, in a passing league. So there's no, it's going to be better. I already know that. So, but how much better, we'll see.
Yeah. So it's safe to say he seems really energized just in your interaction with him.
Yes. Yeah, I think he's happy to be back around it. Ron, and the fact that his son is on the staff helping makes it a family affair thing. He likes Coach Art. He wants to be there for him. They're kind of trying to do what the Rams did with Sean McVay and Wade Phillips. You know, older gentleman who's been around the block. You got to listen to him. And you got the offensive, I don't like saying genius and guru, but offensive coordinator on that side of the ball that's been successful.
Yeah,
to kind of put it together. So that's what's going on here in Atlanta, and it looks like they're off to a really good start.
I hope that Steven Means could stick, man. I got really cool with him in Philly, but I covered him in Baltimore as well. He dated back to that time with Dean Pease, so I hope he can stick. That's a guy that I really like. But just before we get you out of here, Vic Beasley, and we talked a bit about that situation and just, you know, looking back on this, like the guy signed the deal. It just was just I don't even know how to explain. It was bizarre. Let's put it that way. Outside looking in, what's your take on how things happened there? Because you know Vic Beasley and – obviously, you know what the Titans are about. I don't think that was a good match from the start, but what's your viewpoint of that?
Yeah, you started to hear in year four that, hey, he doesn't love football. He can't believe he made this much money doing it. And, you know, you question his heart was going to be in it or was in it. I mean, and this is post-Super Bowl after winning the Deacon Jones Award. And, you know, and that summer they asked him to come in and work with Coach Dan and Coach Brian Young. And he chose to not come in and work and stayed up and work with Bud Dupree. So that should have told you right there, especially after you gave him the fifth-year option. I don't know if you could take it back. I would have said, hey, I'm giving you a fifth-year option if you do this. So that didn't happen. And that was a precursor to the end for Vic. He had a couple plays that year. But then after that, Tennessee, you know, everybody needs a pass rusher. So he was able to do it at one time. But, you know, I think the underlying thing is that Brian Cox got that out of him, you know, with some old school coaching. And, you know, Dwight Freeney was the buffer. So you would need that type of coaching arrangement to keep him playing and keep him going, because he wasn't motivated by money. You know, he wasn't motivated by being the best at his spot, which he was for 1 year. So, you know, there were some issues going on there that, you know, went beyond football that I don't want to speculate on. But, you know, my football sense is that, hey, Brian, whatever it was, Brian Cox and Dwight Freeney got him the boy to play and get 15.5 sacks.
Yeah, and he did the thing. Well, hey, I appreciate you coming on. Elijah, you know, I have a wall in my house, and it has pictures of my memories and experiences in football. I have a picture of this young fella right here and myself, bow tie swag on top of bow tie swag at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's right there on my wall. That's how much I really love this guy, man. This is my OG. Like, for real. And D-Led, man, I appreciate you coming on. I can't wait to connect with you at the preseason game. And, man, you just keep being an inspiration, man. I always look to you for that.
That's right. I certainly appreciate it. And it's always great to pass stuff along and help people out that, you know, some people help me on my way. And it's great to pass it down. And proud of you and all the work you've done and at your various stops, and certainly there in Tennessee with the Titans.
No doubt. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
No one man can stop me. Can I live? No front line to block me. Can I live? Or do I got the
had to get that LOX, you know what I'm saying? Because this type of music was a regular on the Nate and TD show. So since we're condensing the show to a segment, had to give my man Nate Washington a little LOX. Nate, what's going on?
TD, you know how we do, man. I appreciate you having me on today.
Yeah, for sure, man. Always a pleasure to get you on and talk shop. And I always like to be able to pull on some of your experiences. So I guess we'll start it with this. Obviously, you know, the Julio Jones situation, he is now a Tennessee Titan. I want to take you back to your days with the Steelers, you know, and you're on a roster with Hines Ward, with Santonio Holmes, Jerome Bettis in the backfield. How did you guys manage to coexist and not have, at least not have anything come out in the open about just quarrels about targets and just everybody just like, hey, man, the goal is to get to the Super Bowl?
Well, the foundation is Super Bowl championship winning football. And it also starts with the culture in which the attitude of your players take. You know, I think a lot of times in the locker room, you're going to have situations happen, you know. But I think at the end of the day, a lot of guys understand that it's all about what's best for the team. I've also been heard it to be criticized that the Titans may not be able to throw the ball enough for the new acquisition of Julio Jones and those type of things with, you know, how they approach their style of football. But here's the thing I believe in. Just like you stated with the Pittsburgh Steelers of my experience, this Tennessee Titans offense will always be built around the run first.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's going to benefit Julio Jones, you know, aging Julio Jones. Let's say he can't just be that guy that he was year 5-6. So he has an opportunity now to have one of the most not only prolific backs in the game that's still playing today, but one guy that will go down in history in Derrick Henry that would change the whole game for him, because a lot of those big shots will be opened up by the play action pass.
Amen.
I think this will benefit everyone involved. I think AJ will be that short to mediate, a guy that can take those 5, you know, to 10 yard passes and take them yard for this Titans offense. And as you stated, you know, to have a stable back and Jerome Bettis or Derrick Henry, you know, in the backfield, this is an offense that not only will be, you know, probably the most dominant in the red zone, but the time of possession will be theirs, in my opinion. You know, I think each game, they should leave out of each game with every time of possession being in their favor and them controlling the clock. So I think this will benefit everybody. You know, I know there's going to be a lot of guys that want the ball, but, you know, even from seeing AJ on social media, I think he's a pretty team-savvy guy that's going to do whatever to help the team win. I know Derek will feel the same way, and I'm pretty sure Julio will feel the same. You know, this is not a team full of egos. I don't see guys with sporadic personalities that may be in the media, you know, causing troubles. I see a bunch of guys that's willing and ready to work, and a quiet guy in Julio that understands that he's not done playing football yet.
That play action that you point to is really interesting, the passing off of that, because, I mean, let's look at it, right? The last couple of years, we're talking about Khalif Raymond, right? Consistently right. Making plays down the field off of play action. So now you take him off the field and you put Julio Jones in that spot. I mean, it's beautiful for this team. So that's something to really, really look at. And I let me ask you this, though, because – you, again, going back to that experience, right, having Santonio Holmes on the field, having Hines Ward on the field, how much does that create balance as far as what teams have to do coverage-wise?
Oh, it created a tremendous amount of balance because, you know, Hines was – both Hines and Santonio were mid-area workers. They could route you up. They could find their areas in the zone. And they could do everything they could to counteract the play action. I mean, the action that was coming from the defense towards our run game. Because just like this Titans offense, you know, we faced a lot of 8-man boxes with guys trying to help stop our run game. Because a lot of times, if I'm honest, you know, you stop that run game, you stop a lot for offenses like that. You know, yep. The continuity of which they move. You know, we relied heavily on that run game. So on days our run game wasn't working, it just was hard, you know, it was difficult for us to get going. But I don't think that's the case here. You know, as much as I love Santonio and Hines, I don't think they had the tools of an A.J. Brown and a Julio Jones. You know, that size, that speed on the outside, you know, obviously, you know, you can come out and strategically plan to stop the run, but that's going to be impossible with the Titans offense. You can't come out and leave those two guys on the outside one-on-one. You can't leave those guys without a strategy plan to stop them two as well. And I think it's going to be an uphill battle for every defensive coordinator that faces the Titans because you're going to have to pick your poison. It's going to be a situation where, you know, I think if you look back at that Steelers offense and all that we've done, you know, I think a lot of the coordinators that passed through there are going to have to be mentioned. You know, Ken Windsor-Hunt went on after we won our Super Bowl that year. My rookie year with Jerome Bettis and those names that you said, but you know he went on to become a head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Then our next offensive coordinator was Bruce Arians. Mm-hmm. You know, so now looking at this situation where you lose Art Smith, you lose a guy to a head coaching head coaching opportunity, a guy that you know built this team off of play action opportunities. That was, you know, succeeded that personnel in that room and that offensive room to allude to that. And now we look at a new guy in Todd Downing coming and what he's going to bring to the table. And I think that's a lot of what we'll have to pay attention to here about how his philosophy will be on certain downs and distances and different situational football, which will be, you know, third down and red zone packages that will be different for this Titans offense look this year.
And we're talking to Nate Washington, former Titans wide receiver. And Nate, I like how you mentioned Todd Downing because – you know, we got to talk to him, and he said one of the things with A.J. Brown was he wants to expand his route tree. He wants to get him to recognize coverages better and move him around the formation. When you hear those type of things, if that were you that he was talking about, how excited would you get?
Awesome. I think it would be outstanding. You know, my only year of my career that I went over 1,000, I played inside predominantly probably about 65 to 70% of the time. And prior to that, I was just a strictly outside receiver, you know. But Kenny Britt went down, and that's basically what I became, a guy that they moved all over the place from inside to out, made sure that they put me in position to get the ball. So now when you hear things like that coming from A.J. Brown, for A.J. Brown situation and his ability with his yak, you know, his yards after catch, you know, yeah. I think A.J. can't do nothing but be ecstatic, you know, because now you get an opportunity to move around the whole offense inside and out. There'll never be a time that they can, you know, schematically scheme you and being in one position. And not only would that happen, but I'm pretty sure that Ty will find a way to do the same with Julio. You know, Julio just is not an outside receiver to me anymore. I think he'll be great, just like a Larry Fitzgerald inside. I think that's something that he'll be great at with still the strength and explosion to make big plays, you know. So it's going to be exciting if that's the idea that Tyler Downing has about doing with this offense, moving those guys around, giving them different looks, not always putting them on the left or the right side, but making sure that they're moved around to, you know, make sure they kill the defense basically the best way they can, because that's what they'll have the opportunity to do.
And, you know, when he mentioned moving them around, the first thing I thought of was the Ravens game, right, where they got A.J. Brown in the slot against Marlon Humphrey. You don't have the sideline to use as your friend anymore. It's a two-way go. It's nothing but space. And he was killing him, it just to put it bluntly. So I think that's a good opportunity for the Titans to be able to take advantage of that. But then with Julio, right, Julio Jones, they'll bump him inside also. What is it about these guys and Josh Reynolds as well? And even down the line, Dez Fitzpatrick, they could do that. So what is it about these guys, specifically Brown and Jones, that makes them so able to play inside and outside?
Well, I think it's strictly their size and explosion. You know, a lot of times you get guys that typically when you have a guy that plays inside, he's going to be a smaller, quicker guy.
Right.
Because a lot of times when you get guys on the outside, they may not be as shifty or agile as a guy that's that the smaller, quicker guy inside. But you got guys like AJ and Julio, you know, still have an explosion, still having a quick short yardage maneuverability that inside guy would typically have. That's just nothing but another tool to use, you know, especially with the experience that Julio has facing defenses. That experience and knowledge in itself, you know, will be tremendous, because there will always be soft boys in a zone or in a man-to-man coverage that may not be drawn up on the paper. You know, an end cut may not always look like a 16-yard box end cut. You know, sometimes you may have to round it off at 12 and compensate the look that a defense is giving you. But a smarter guy, an experienced guy, is going to understand those type of intricacies when you're facing a defense from the slot in comparison to being outside. So having the experience of Julio to not only, you know, move him inside, but I'm pretty sure to teach AJ as well those soft spots in the zone, those soft spots in the man-to-man, how to take advantage of which play actions, how to take advantage of which actions from Derrick Henry. You know, those type of things will all allude to, you know, being a positive opportunity for that offense. And I think at the end of the day, as you stated, you know, Josh Reynolds, Cameron Bassett, Khalif Raymond, these guys will still be huge assets for this offense, because at the end of the day, when you look at it, obviously this would definitely be a big three-headed monster on paper. But I also seen AJ say something, you know, that is going to be completely true. At the end of the day, it's only paper. It's only paper right now. Work is still going to have to be done. And when you get into the season and those type of, you know, live bullets starting to fly in those games on Sunday, and all those the teams are looking at Derek, Julio, and, you know, AJ, and now all of a sudden you have a Josh Reynolds screaming up the seam, or you have a Cameron Batson that can make a play on the screen and take it to the house. Those guys will be huge assets for this offense, to still having a tool built, still be able to use their size and their ability on this roster to get some things done as well.
And we're talking to Nate Washington, former Titans receiver, and my co-host on the Nate and TD show. It's coming soon. We'll get something working with that. But well, one of the other things that I wanted to ask you is if you were Rob Moore, because you were in a receiver coach situation, right, for camp with the Bucks. If you were Rob Moore, a guy who has played the game before, a guy who clearly the players respect, how would you handle this situation, right? Is there balance? Like, do you just sit back and you let Julio go ahead and go, or how do you handle that? As far as, like, you know, his reaching out to the guys and coaching them. You know what I mean?
Right. I remember when I was going to work with the Bucks and Coach Bruce Arians sat me down, And he was like, you know, you'll obviously be an assistant coach, but I don't want you sitting back just because it's Mike Evans and, you know, Chris and those guys that have been around for a while. I want you to still teach those guys. And one thing about it is, you know, as you stated, guys like Rob Moore, they have respect throughout the league when it comes to the receiver room because these guys understand that he played the game at a high level.
Yep.
So it's not just about telling a receiver, oh, you got to get inside on an in cut, or, oh, you got to make sure you stack the man on a go route. You know, because these type of things, being that he's done it before and seen it on a high level as well, these guys will respect the fact that when he gives them those tidbits, that he understands that they can still get it done. You know, when you get a guy like a Julio Jones at the back end of his career, perennial Hall of Famer, everybody knows that he'll probably be a first ballot. You know, a guy that can still, you know, with all of those accolades, affect and impact the game on a tremendous level. I think it's a huge understanding from Rob Moore to understand you have a professional coming in there that understands what he's doing, but also can go to another level. It's about taking care of your body. It's about, you know, understanding how you can fit in that offense, not only as a leader vocally, but, you know, with your play. And I would, you know, I don't know Rob Moore personally, but I'm pretty sure he's a good coach that understands that there's going to be some things that Julio understands about taking care of his body and the intricacies of the game, but also understanding that he can help him grow even more at the back end of his career. Excuse me. My 11th year in Houston, you know, although I knew a lot about, you know, what we were doing and trying to accomplish as an offense, there was just still so much that I learned from Coach Stanley at the time that I didn't think of. And he had coached a lot of good receivers, you know, and crossing paths with Coach Tom Moore at the back end of my career and having an opportunity from him coaching Marvin Harrison and Reggie Wayne and Peyton Manning at the time. Mm. He was able to give me a lot of tidbits as well. So you're going to find coaches like that that you connect with personally that understand that you're basically mature in this league and you understand how to win a game, but they're always going to coach you. They're always going to make sure that you have the ability to impact the game on your best foot, you know. So I'm pretty sure Coach Rob Moore will make sure that those guys are cool and have a relationship in that room, but will still bring that coaching to the table that Julio will need to get the job done for this season.
Absolutely. And, you know, if there was one gripe that I have about Julio Jones, and this always bothered me with him, he don't score enough touchdowns, man. Like, you know, you look at his career, like he'll have 100 receptions, 4 or 5 touchdowns. It's like, daggone, man. Bring that thing to pay dirt more. But, you know, for whatever reasons, well, we'll see what happens there. The last thing I want to ask you is just with just the locker room, right? It's no secret whatsoever. Julio Jones, that man does not practice, right? He's on the Kawhi Leonard program, you know what I mean? So that being said, in the locker room, like, how do you think guys will perceive that? You know, guys, like, you know, they're out there practicing and doing what they have to do, and they look over and they see Julio Jones not participating in practice as much. You think that will create envy?
Well, I'll start here. You know, personal feelings will always be amongst, you know, in the locker room. But I'll go a step further to say, once again, when we talk about Super Bowl culture, right, you talk about from the head down. One thing about, you know, the Bill Belichicks, the Mike Tomlins, those guys that compete for a Super Bowl every year, or, excuse me, last year Bill didn't, but those guys that compete on a consistent basis, they understand that the nature of the football team is to do what's best for the team. They don't care about what anybody feels. They don't care about, you know, what any media says. They don't care about any of that. They're going to do what's best for the team. Mm-hmm. Now, when you trickle down to the guys in the locker room, the guys in the locker room are going to pick up that attitude. And starting with Coach Vrabel, he understands that, you know, this is a long season. If he can get a guy on Sunday in comparison to a guy on a Wednesday afternoon practice, I understand that he will do whatever he needs to do to handle that. You know, with that being said, you look around that locker room, you already got a ton of guys with great personalities. Ryan Tannehill, Kevin Byard, AJ from, you know, Derrick Henry. These aren't guys with the type of attitude or personal vendetta towards someone to watch them with envy because they're not working. These are lunch pail guys. So I expect that understanding to come. I expect these guys to understand that Julio's practice schedule will be a little bit different from theirs. And I don't believe that it'll sway them not one way. You know, I believe that they'll show up every day to practice to understand that individually they must all put in work in some form or facet. Even if it's being in the training room and going through rehabilitation throughout the week, I think that they all understand that it's about what you need to do to get there for Sunday. And I'm pretty sure that they all that have that type of attitude. You know, whether you have a guy here and there, lower on the totem pole that kind of snarls because he may be taking all of Julio's rep practices in practice and then doesn't get them in the game. The young guy, he may feel some type of way, but at the end of the day, when you have veteran leaders like Taylor Lewan, like now, when you have veteran leaders like Derrick Henry, like Ryan Tannehill, I don't believe that those things will become a hindrance because those type of guys will keep the energy on. Let's work. Let's stay focused on Wednesday practice, and whatever we'll do Sunday, we'll get there. We'll handle accordingly. That's the only thing that you can do. It's about winning championship culture football, and you can't control what somebody is doing throughout the week. Each guy has a different age on their bodies. Julio, obviously, a little bit older, you know, so his practice schedule shouldn't be the same, in my opinion. His practice schedule should be, you know, predominantly scheduled to his body type and what he's able to handle right now. And whoever is around that doesn't understand that player-wise, I'm pretty sure that they'll be put in their place when they understand the workload throughout the week, you know, in room, in the weight room, in the organization, to understand that that's what's needed to get one of the best players in the game right now on the field that's going to help them on Sundays.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is what I would categorically describe as radio gold. And this is what we do every week during the season. I mean, look, I just play the Don King role. I come on, talk a little bit, and then Nate plays the Mike Tyson role. He goes out and kill him. That's how it boils down, man. It's always a pleasure talking shop with you, man. I appreciate this. We got to definitely make sure that we do it throughout the off season, man. And you already know, when I come to the A, man, we're going to have to link up.
Only in America, T.D. Only in America, man. I love it, man. Awesome. Always good talking to you, man. I love talking shop, man. I can't wait for this year so we get the show back on the road. And I'm here, man, whenever you're ready, man. Thanks for the call.
For sure. Ladies and gentlemen, Nate Washington. We will be right back.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD. I ain't got time for playing. I'm saying, man, we out here
trying to function. We out here trying to function. We out here trying to function. All right, back from the break. This, ladies and gentlemen, is one that I've been waiting to do. Definitely could make it happen. I'm proud to be able to call this gentleman my ESPN teammate, and that is none other than NFL analyst Teddy Bruschi. Teddy, what's going on, man?
DD, I'm doing good, man. It's nice to be on. Thanks for having me.
Oh, absolutely, man. I want to say this. I always love the enthusiasm that you brought as a football player. I love what you bring as an analyst as well. Your segments is always that's one of the funnest opportunities for me to watch, you know, somebody talk shop. So I appreciate you for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Yeah, man, football, that's what I'm passionate about, so let's talk it.
Yes, sir. And it just I guess let's start here because obviously the Julio Jones situation – everyone is going crazy over that, and I think it's a huge acquisition for the Titans. But you've been through this before, right? If you go back to when you were a Patriot and you guys acquired Randy Moss, I want to just kind of get some of your insight just as far as how that energized the team and how that – because you guys were already good. But, I mean, how did that kind of put you guys to where you got to?
Yeah, we realized that the only difference with Julio and Randy coming in is when Randy Moss came in, he changed the landscape of us offensively. So we became much more explosive. We ended up scoring a lot of points, setting records. I mean, Brady throwing 50, I think it was, and Randy catching 23. So we just looked different from day one with Randy out there, also having Wes Welker and some other weapons inside that Brady could utilize. So changing the scope of who you felt you were offensively, that was the Randy Moss effect. I mean, I see this move of Julio, TD, as, you know, almost complimenting and making you better at what you already are. And that's the difference I see, because Julio, you know, along with A.J. Brown and then Derrick Henry, adding along to that physical element of a just tough, strong, tough guys to tackle in that offense.
And that's something that you continue to mention. I look at your hits, and you mentioned the physicality, and you just mentioned it just now. As a defender, right, when you know you're going against a team like that, does that change your approach, or how do you look at it? Like, I know I'm going to be in a backyard fight. Is that kind of how it goes?
It is, and in Wednesday sort of initial game plan meetings that you bring it to the defensive squad as a defensive coordinator, as a front seven player, you're thinking to yourself, you know what, well, now hold on a second. The number one reason we have to stop Tennessee's offense is still in the backfield, right?
Mm.
That big guy, that 240-pound man and Derrick Henry. I know they have Julio now, but can we focus on what's important? And then you'll get some defensive backs saying, well, wait a minute. I need help with Julio because we've also got AJ over there. So now there's more of a conflict in terms of which one do you decide on stopping. For me as a former linebacker, if you can't stop Derrick Henry in the run game, they don't need to throw it to Julio. So that's what it's still going to be. But to have Julio now, I mean, now that you're going to have a 3rd-and-7 situation in a critical situation, you have Julio that can win, AJ that can win, and then you're also, man, this team's not afraid to run it on a 3rd-and-long situation. It just puts me in a conflict as a front seven player, as the multiple things, the multiple threats you have to defend.
And so would you say, and we're talking to Teddy Bruschi, ESPN NFL analyst and former New England Patriot, a Super Bowl champion at that, would you say that being at that second level and when they run that play action, it opens up that passing lane. Is that something like, is it almost irresistible to take that step forward when they do that play action?
Yes. It's just now that when that play action is executed, now that player in space is Julio Jones.
Yeah.
In addition to AJ Brown. And that's now, I mean, a catch and run of, I don't know, I mean, Corey Davis was there last year, a catch and run comparatively to maybe a catch and run of like 10 to 12. Now it could be like 20 to 30.
Right.
So because of who Julio is. Now, Julio had some injury problems, okay?
Yeah.
And now Julio also is going to have a little bit of a reality check once he gets to Tennessee, because they're not going to change because of him too much. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where head coach Mike Vrabel comes in. Because I played with Rabes, and I was coached by a coach by the name of Bill Parcells before Belichick got to New England, and I see Bill Parcells in Vrabel. And what Parcells was so good at doing is taking veteran players and just getting them on the same page of the team goal. Listen, so I can just see the conversation with Rabes and Julio, amen. We're probably not going to get you 150 to 200 targets. So you realize that, right? But this is a good physical team that you're going to get your opportunities. And when you get them, we're going to want you to be able to, you know, do what you do and be Julio. I'm going to take care of you during the year. All right. I don't need you to practice, but I need you to practice in critical times. So we're going to take care of you physically so you can play all 16. Those type of conversations, a great head coach knows how to manage those star players that come to contribute.
A couple things there, because you're spot on, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because when we spoke to John Robinson, that's what I asked him. I said, Julio Jones, for the most part, has averaged 9 targets per game throughout his career. Have you spoken to him about how that's not going to happen in this situation? And he said that they did have that conversation. He told him that goal, number one, is to win. So that is something that's comforting for Titans fans, and it should be comforting for the team. And then also, Rob Moore, the receiver coach, I talked to him last year, and we were talking about getting 1,000 yards, and he said that, you know, they pride themselves on being able to do that on 50 to 60 targets. So they're taking more of the quality over quantity type of aspect, and 50 to 60 receptions, pardon me. So that's a good thing. You mentioned Coach Vrabel, and I actually did an article on Coach just about off the field stuff, and he told me that your wife, Heidi – had the best lemon chicken pasta. And you guys used to double take date. He and Jen, they that was their favorite. So I had to mention that. But when you look at Coach Vrabel, the Bill Parcells parallel, and just another thing with the Bill Parcells, actually, I've met you in person before. You obviously don't remember, but it was at Chris Slade camp, and it was your rookie year, okay, man. So this is pretty cool getting to have you on. But tell me a little bit about Vrabel.
Awesome.
Like, what makes him tick?
I know. I think there's a there's just an ability and certain people in authoritative positions when they know how to reach various different personalities and individuals and reach them in a way where he makes them feel like, I'm with you, okay? I'm with you. I get you. I've been in your situation. This is a story. I can relate to where I was, to where you are, and this is how it's going to work out. Trust me. And that's those last two words, trust me. And then that player ends up saying, okay, well, we'll see. And that very thing happens. And then it's like that trust is developed. That's what I think is the strength of Vrabes as the head coach, how he can just get everybody on the same page because he can reach people in different ways. It's a unique skill, but even when I played with him, I mean, whether he was a tight end on offense or an outside linebacker or played inside, he could relate to a lot of different positions and a lot of different people, and that's what makes him a good head coach.
That's awesome insight. And just as far as the defense itself, let's look at the linebackers, right? Jayon Brown and Rashawn Evans. And I want to ask you this because I feel like last year was kind of an anomaly for Evans because it seemed like he was lost in the system, not really understanding things. So as a guy who's been there and done that, how much does knowing all the checks, knowing the assignments and everything that you need to know, how much does that allow you to play faster and to your best ability?
Well, there's various steps in the process of pre- to post-snap defensive football. And if you have to focus on only your own assignment, you miss a step of also getting other people on the same page. And that's what I think is a big step of being a linebacker, why you have to know what you're doing inside and out, because for you to eventually have success after you've got the play called, after you've got the adjustment, then you're checking up on everyone else. This has to happen very fast before the ball snaps. Mm-hmm. And if you're worrying about step one or step two, you can't get to step three or step four. So, I mean, I know that's a lot to talk about because in various different defenses, all those steps are different. Now, how's your defense going to be helped? Because that's the whole thing. All right, you guys draft some more defensive ends. You draft some more help defensively. But how are they going to get better? Because everybody's saying, well, they can't stop people. Offensively, if they improve with Julio Jones, there's going to be a trickle-down effect defensively. If you can limit my plays and you can limit the series that I have to be out there by you winning the time of possession battle, there's going to be less pressure on me because now I'm thinking defensively, fellas, let's just make three plays per game, okay? If we make three impactful plays per game and we give it back to our offense, we know they're going to keep the ball possibly 30, 35 minutes a game. That's how we limit a lot of these teams from scoring points. And on a one-game season, okay, playoffs, if they were to play, say, the Kansas City Chiefs, do I think they can compete? And I would say yes, because the formula is not about outscoring. It's about a physical type of nature of football where you just want to beat people up and win a different way against a very finesse type of football offense. Can it be done? It can on a one-game week.
Yeah, and that's really what's so beautiful about football as compared to the NBA Finals and all these other where they have series, man. It's a one hitter quitter. You better get it done when you have the opportunity. Let's talk about the pass rush real quick. What are your thoughts on the additions of Danico Autry, Bud Dupree? How can they improve upon that 19 sack total, which was abysmal?
Yeah, hopefully Bud's healthy, and I know everyone's hoping for that because Bud Dupree, I think, is very unique in terms of how he can be physical and how he can be fast. So that right there, if you've hit on a signing there that he comes and reestablishes himself as a player after an injury that he suffered, I believe it was ACL, mm-hmm. Then that's a huge plus. But, I mean, getting to those pass rush situations also was a problem in terms of winning on first and second down. If you can't get them to third and long, you're going to have a hard time. Yep. So this is one of those rare teams, TD, that has to play complementary football to be successful. I mean, the special teams has to be you're going to play a field position battle all year long to be ultimately successful with an offense that wants to be physical. So defensively, pass rush, getting in those situations in third and long, that's going to be part of the hard part also.
And last thing, I'm not going to ask you about a record prediction, but what do you think the outlook for this team is? Do you see them as, you know, one of the top four seeds? I guess we'll put it that way.
I see them as a double-digit total in terms of wins. Now, there's going to be, you know, a handful of games where it's like one play here, one play there, but I think it's a 10-win football team. Where that takes them depends on where some of those victories happen. Are they within the division?
Yeah.
How do they play versus the Colts? Those type of things. But definitely they will be talked about in December as playing meaningful games. I just know they'll be there.
All right. So before we get you out of here, hey, listen, you wrapped up the huddle one way, so I need you to wrap up this show, this segment one way. Can I get it all year, please?
How we feel about talking ball with TD? Oh, yeah.
Yes, that is what I'm talking about. I appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
All right, it was fun, TD. Thanks.
All right, man. Take care.